From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1970 with President Nixon's so-called War on Drugs and the passing of the Controlled Substances Act. The statute called for the regulation of certain drugs and substances, including marijuana and its cannabinoids, which were labeled as Schedule I drugs, the most dangerous of the five schedules. Hemp, a variety of the cannabis sativa plant species, was included in the cannabinoids category. But here's what regulators and lawmakers misunderstood. Hemp, despite the reputation, is very different from marijuana. It doesn't have the same psychoactive effects, so you can't really get high from it. And according to researchers, it's one of the most useful plants in the world. Legislation has passed since the 1970s to reclassify hemp, but there are still misconceptions and stigma surrounding the plant. This past April, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell introduced the Hemp Farming Act. If passed, hemp would no longer be a controlled substance. And with the crop being legalized at the federal level, farmers could begin to capitalize on its potential to transform the food, clothing, construction, and pharmaceutical industries. So what can hemp do? Well, it's got thousands of applications. It's in veggie burgers, coffee, shampoo, computer chips, building materials. It's a popular medical supplement. 3 years ago, growing hemp was illegal in New York State. 2 years ago, it was against the law to sell it, and now Governor Cuomo wants New York to be a leader in hemp processing and innovation. And there's other uses as well, rope, paper, and more. This hour, it's Hemp 101 of sorts. Our guests will help us understand what hemp is, how it is different from its controversial cousin, and the potential impact on our lives. They say Rochester's academic, cultural, and agricultural assets make it a prime candidate for becoming a leader in this emerging industry. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. Zach Sarkis is co-founder of Flower City Solutions, which just organized last weekend the New York Hemp Lab. Zach, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you so much, Evan.
Also with us is Jacob Fox, founder of Closed Loop Systems, which is what, Jacob? Welcome and tell us what that is.
Yeah, we specialize in constructing resource recovery parks. So, you know, we're very involved in the waste industry and parlays to hemp because, you know, as you mentioned, building materials, clothing, paper, if all those materials were biodegradable, then they could enter the biodegradable waste stream, and that's my job to turn it back into soil.
Very good. Well, thanks for being here. Our thanks as well to Jason Klimek, who is an attorney with Boyle & Code, head of the cannabis practice there. Jason, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Harold Smith. Dr. Smith is a professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Biophysics at the University of Rochester and the founder of Cannametrics. What is Cannametrics?
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thanks for being here.
Great. Cannametrics is a company that's trying to improve the quality of the medicinal product by better testing so that we understand dosing and appropriate applications for people.
Okay. Well, look, I think the history matters here. And before the program even began, our guests were having a discussion going back many decades in this country. Because if you go to the first decades of this country, hemp was cultivated, used in a lot of different ways, and I see you nodding over there, Zach. So let's kind of do a little history lesson on this, and we'll bring in all of our guests. But what do you think, where did we start to go wrong with misunderstanding hemp?
Well, quite frankly, you know, we see this plant that's incredibly diverse, and it's, you know, one degree of separation from every major industry we see today. It has applications and values. Back in the mid-20th century, we saw an uprising against marijuana as a plant, and it has that name, marijuana, which actually kind of points to the derogatory approach that was taken to shape around this plant and associating it with a Hispanic community and targeting it as this, oh, if you smoke marijuana, you know, these people are coming here and they're taking marijuana and they're using it against us or using it to negatively influence our culture. And so very much this racist stigma that was associated with the language of marijuana. So that really started with this kind of fear-mongering around populations who use the plant, even though it was widely cultivated. Our founding fathers used this plant in their backyards. You know, there was lots of examples of writing of talking about the hemp crop and how the hemp crop was this year from, again, our founding fathers. So it was a long period of time where its utilitarian value from the food to the fiber, specifically for rope, you know, but also for textiles, that it was really cultivated. And mid-1900s, we saw the conversation changing.
Yeah, so just to put on that, Thomas Jefferson actually holds a patent for a hemp decorticator, Which is how you separate the fiber and the herd from the hemp product. You used to be able to pay your taxes in hemp in America. The first American flag was sewn out of hemp fiber. The Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper. So it has a lot of roots in America. And, you know, it unfortunately was made illegal. The Marijuana Tax Act of 1937 is one key point that you can point to, but then it was actually re-legalized so that we could support the war effort and build and grow for ropes and sails for ships. And then when the war on drugs really turned up a notch, as you mentioned, in the 60s and the 70s, it became very illegal with, you know, added mandatory minimums, you know, established with relation to cannabis. But you know, it's played a storied history in our past. And I mean, one, you know, interesting thing is it's a sustainable product. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, can potentially be threatening to certain industries. So, you know, you get a perfect storm of, derogatory racism. You get, competition with other industries. You get it at a time of great fear. There's a great, you know, if you ever want to learn about cannabis history, look up Harry J. Anslinger. And he testified in front of Congress saying that cannabis was going to turn all the young kids into raging lunatics. And, you know, Reefer Madness is, you know, a popular propaganda film. And, you know, it was basically illegal. And now, you know, as we're coming back to it, we're understanding, you know, that we really missed out on a lot of innovation. So now, you know, we're having to pick up, you know, at 1937 time.
Okay, but there's something that I still don't fully understand here, which is that, and here's the analogy in my mind. Let's say the government decides that muffins should not be sweet. They should be savory. We should not be having sweet tooth muffins. So that chocolate muffin you want is going to be illegal. But then I go, wait a second, this isn't a chocolate muffin, it's pumpernickel. Now, everyone's had that terrible experience where you're at a banquet and you pick up a muffin and you think it's chocolate and it's pumpernickel, and it's a disaster. But in this case, the government bans it anyway, thinking it's related, but you go, wait, I can't get a sugar high off. There's no sugar, it's a pumpernickel muffin. Too bad. It looks too much the same. We're banning this. Why did hemp get the same treatment from the government if it was going after cannabis? If it's a cousin, if it's related, but you're not getting high off it, what happened here?
No, I think, I mean, what Jacob identified, this is what the folks who have been participating in the hemp economy, or at least in advocacy for the past 30, 40 years, it's why hemp? It has been bundled, and there isn't a clear distinction as to why. It was all part of the cannabis family. I think from a perspective, we could say, of like eradicating this plant from the face of North America, you know, because hemp as a plant could grow as a ditchweed, you know, the seeds could go and land in the ditch growing by the side of the road. And there was an immense effort to eradicate all these plants from the United States. And I think, you know, because hemp looks so much like cannabis with THC variety, like higher THC content, again, hemp is a plant that has below 0.3% THC, whereas anything above that is considered, you know, marijuana.
But how much does it look like cannabis?
Oh, I mean, it's the same plant, but it's that have been cultivated for different purposes. So we have the resins of CBD, we have the resins of THC, we have the fiber varieties, we have the seed varieties. There's a spectrum there.
Yeah. Okay, so there are a couple of things here. Dr. Smith, true that if you try to treat hemp like cannabis, you're not going to get high in the same way, is that right?
Hemp doesn't have the THC content. And in fact, I wanted to add a comment that if you look at the major medical value of hemp, which is considered CBD, but it's cannabidiol, but it's actually more than that. There's more chemistries that are important. The way the federal government worked with this is that if CBD, which is the good thing in hemp, came from a plant that had THC in it, it was part of the regulation and it was banned. So even though people knew that CBD could not get you high and has medicinal value, in fact, New York led the charge against Anslinger, saying that there was medicinal qualities in hemp and in marijuana, and basically that evoked the wrath of the federal government towards New York State back in the days that this was being made illegal. So one has a lot of medicinal qualities to it. The other one, marijuana, has medicinal qualities and a psychotropic effect, which is the THC, the high. What's interesting is that we're just starting to learn that the blend of chemistries in plants can blend with THC, and moderate how much high you get so that you can get zero to no high depending on how much CBD is in the product.
On the legal side, let me ask Jason Klimek, an attorney with Boyle & Code now. As we said from the outset, there's been a lot of change happening on the landscape now. Get us fully up to date with what we can and can't do with hemp here.
Well, so as Zach kind of said, that we have the TH or the marijuana derived and the hemp derived for CBD, things like that. So right now we just a couple of months ago, the first marijuana based medicine Epidiolex for a pretty rare childhood seizure disorder was just FDA approved. Now that was derived from the cannabis plant, which has had over 0.3% THC. And so we saw a question come up at the federal level of how does this impact the Controlled Substances Act and the DEA's position on this? And the DEA really said, we understand that this was just FDA approved. There's medical usage that has now been proven. We're still not very comfortable with cannabis in general. So the federal government takes this very kind of schizophrenic look at cannabis and hemp. You know, with Mitch McConnell's farm bill, we have regulated and legal hemp production, but we also have its very closely related cousin, cannabis. We have a compound from that has no psychoactive abilities whatsoever that the federal government has said, okay, we understand that there's something legal there, but the plant that it comes from, we don't want anymore, or we don't want. It's still illegal. CBD from a cannabis-derived plant is, I think, now a Schedule 4 or 5 drug. Cannabis itself is still a Schedule 1, classified the same as cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that's going to change within the next decade.
I would say so. I mean, there's a lot of, in fact, I was just reading this morning, a lot of the incoming newly elected Democrats
that's
in the
right.
House
that's right.
are looking to reschedule things.
Yeah, I think that's right. And just looking at sort of trend lines in history, I'm not sure that's going to be a totally partisan issue within a decade. We'll see. May not even be now. But okay, so now who can grow hemp? Who can do it and do it where?
That's a great question. So currently, New York State Ag and Markets has been doing a pilot program, industrial hemp pilot program that they've orchestrated primarily through Cornell University as well as Morrisville, SUNY Morrisville. And there is a regulatory process that you have to apply for a permit. You can't really have a criminal background, essentially, to have access to such a permit to do it on behalf of research. So everyone, there's 168 research partners currently in New York State who have I think there was 3,200 acres that were permitted to be grown. I don't think it was the full 3,200 acres that were actually grown this year, but there's 3,200 acres of hemp that was
of hemp, which is almost what 3,000 more than 2 years ago, or something.
Oh yeah,
like
it's
that?
an incredible increase. And of that, there's about, I think, 40 people who have permit to grow CBD-specific plants. There's fiber and grain variety permits, and there's CBD permits. This year, actually, Ag and Markets stopped accepting all CBD permits early around in May because 50% of the applications were for CBD cultivation. And they kind of threw their hands up saying, hey, we're not ready for this. We're not really sure. It feels like a gray market. We need to get more clear on what CBD means or what it is. And so, yeah, there's that's what we've seen in on the
okay. So, but let's stipulate something here, though, Zach. Yeah. I'm not the smartest guy. There's something I don't understand here. Everything that our guests are describing about hemp is that it's been misunderstood. The reputation, it's been too closely tied and intertwined with marijuana for decades, which is unfortunate because of the utility of this product. And in a moment, I'll ask our guests, really, even though it has thousands of applications, what are the top applications that we're going to see New York State produce? What should we really expect here? We'll get to that in a moment. If it's really as harmless as we say, why do we need all of the? Why can't I just grow it in my backyard if I want to? I grow bell peppers.
Yeah.
I grow tomatoes.
Great
question. Is there a reason I can't?
So at this point in time, again, with given the federal consideration, even the state laws, it's very much a new old plant. We're reintroducing it, and I think that there's going to be a lot of interest in tracking the development from a research perspective, from a legalization perspective. You know, even to the basic, like if let's say it all gets legal, you know, both the THC varieties and the CBD varieties, or just the hemp and the other cannabis varieties. you're still going to want to know if there's a hemp field next to a cannabis field, because cross-pollination will impact the crop.
Okay.
So it's like
okay.
really actually knowing.
So that's helpful.
Yeah. So from a logistics perspective, understanding the layout as well as a regulatory quality control, all these things are absolutely crucial to understanding.
And you see in some states where it has already become legal recreationally, it's not just what you carry with you, but you're allowed to grow a certain number of plants, which would be a normal single-person use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you touched on a really important point. It's like, can you, you know, if it's all legal, you know, in this scenario, can you grow in your backyard? And I mean, I think that that's, you know, a big differentiator between how we look at other, you know, quote, drugs. You know, you can't grow beers in your backyard. You can't, you know, distill, you know, liquor effectively. But you really, if you were... you know, you could have a couple plants and that would, you know, be good for you. So there's not a lot of financial incentive in that. But
okay.
So, you know, that is what is being talked about a lot is, you know, do we legalize and let only certain people grow? Do we legalize and let everybody grow? And you touched on a very, you know, contentious point right now.
All right. And the cross-pollination is interesting. But I do want to get a sense for if those in the industry think it's still too restrictive. Yes or no?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. <There's> Look no, on Jacob's yeah. face. Said,
but again, because there's, yes. there's only, you know, 168 people participating currently, and it's a $500 okay. investment to even be a research partner.
And you have to get a DEA seed import permit, which was what it was like. I don't know if you can now, you can buy from within the United States,
yeah.
but
okay.
you look up a great example of when the pilot program first launched in New York State, and you had to get a DEA cop come out watching you plant hemp seeds.
Yeah, it's
and
very
that was
controlled
cost prohibitive.
And guarded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That seems a little dark.
Yeah, it is.
You know, ominous.
Very much so.
So what would satisfy the guys across the table who want to see less, fewer restrictions here? What's possible here, Jason?
Well, I think that one of the things is we need to take an evidence-based approach. Mm. As I was talking earlier, I was listening to the radio in the car the other day, and I heard an advertisement for a CBD store, a store selling CBD products. And the sum and substance of it was, hey, you know, this is a cure for these ailments, mm-hmm. or if you have these problems, use CBD.
Right.
From the government's perspective, that's going to be a huge issue. And, you know, just from a general legal perspective, if you're making claims that aren't substantiated, that's a big problem. And you run the risk of people, and we see this in the drug supplement market, you run the risk of people foregoing legitimate medical advice.
Absolutely.
Because they can take this over-the-counter product that's the panacea. So I think that, you know, while regulation does have to lessen to allow the industry to grow, it still needs to be targeted surgical regulation. And just to bore everybody for a second, one of the things that is really interesting is there's a Supreme Court case that's kind of on point of what we're talking about here. This was, I can't remember when, 40s, 50s, 60s, something in there, where there was a federal law that said for, I think it was wheat growers, you can't grow wheat. There's too much. It's overproduction. It's affecting the prices. So a farmer decided to grow wheat solely for his consumption, wasn't selling it out of state, wasn't doing anything. The feds came in and said you had to stop, sued him, went to court, went all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, we get that it's just you. You're not going into interstate commerce. But you know what? If we take all the individual people like you, all the little farmers who are growing this, you're in the aggregate affecting the price of wheat. So when you look at like something like hemp, if there's not that type of regulation, then the feds might get a little nervous about it's affecting the entire agricultural industry in a way that they can't control. So they're always going to want to keep an eye on what levels of production are happening.
Okay, fair enough. And before I grab a phone call, I'm looking at a couple of pictures side by side tweeted by our producer, Megan Mack. And, you know, I mean, I guess they look the same. They don't look exactly the same to me. It's not
all,
like it
depends on what variety.
Exactly.
So
it's all variety.
Fiber variety could be 14 feet tall. And
Variety hemp.
Yes, and it could look just like a bamboo tree. But then but then hemp grown for CBD could look just like a cannabis plant grown for THC where you're looking for the buds. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you're looking for out of the plant, which determines what type of plant you plant.
That's why testing is so important, to make sure that you have the kind of plant that you want. yeah. especially when you're growing outdoors.
Mm. Well, I was going to grab Dan in Brighton, who's off the line now, but he called to say that he thinks the war on drugs is stupid, and marijuana should be legal too, and this country would have fewer problems.
It's a big assumption. Box to open, but at the same time, there is evidence that inclusivity and integration of drugs creates a different context than creating, you know, banning it and making it a black market that's put on the streets and in the back alleys versus something that we're addressing as a community. So I think how we're looking at drugs in general, specifically looking at abuse and addiction, it's a different conversation. There's been a lot of different approaches, and we see in other places in the world where we're opening the dialogue and creating an inclusive environment for consumption is generally safer. We can say publicly.
Zach Sarkis is co-founder of Flower City Solutions, which is what, by the way?
Flower City Solutions is a startup in Rochester, New York, and we've identified the emerging hemp industry as a really awesome opportunity to disrupt agroeconomics, this system that is currently turning away from the farmer, specifically small to medium-scale farmer, that's really looking at a way to help jumpstart the regional hemp industry. And we've identified education and networking as a primary starting point where we can bring people together, bring industry experts together to begin to educate on something that we believe, specifically agritech in this region, will really be a pivotal point that in which our community organizes around to drive markets and jobs in New York State, specifically Rochester.
So hemp has thousands of applications, but the top of the list for the future that you think will drive real economic growth in our region and in our state, give me that short list, and I'll ask all of you. Zach?
One thing that we discovered at the New York Hemp Lab is this: how much we don't even know what we don't even know about yet. It's like there's absolute potential. There's incredible potential in these 25,000 things, but realistically, where are we today? Our region is positioned to be in an incredible seed producer. We have the agricultural land and retrofitting existing equipment to cultivate seed. You plant it as if you were planting corn. You harvest it in the same way. You got to, you know, change the tractor, the combine around a little bit so it can be durable enough to harvest hemp. But that's something that we could be doing today. And then when you harvest the seed, you're left with this fibrous stalk in the field. And as we update our equipment to be able to harvest that, then we can talk more about the plastic, the bioplastics that are derived from the hemp plant, that we're talking about the building materials such as hempcrete, which is an incredible carbon sink, as well as a non-toxic, incredibly energy efficient building material, to say the least. So I think cannabinoids, the research and extraction of cannabinoid content is absolutely going to be a focal point of this region. And it will be, we have such an incredible scientific community that will be driving research on accessibility and integration in the body, as well as, again, this kind of artisan approach for local regional consumption. And I think that we'll see that Western New York will be absolutely producing the resins as well as the grains. And then we'll see about the fiber of how that market develops.
Okay, Jacob Fox.
So I'm looking at this from the waste perspective. So I'm seeing, you know, a cannabis plant has three main uses. There's the seed, and then there's the fiber, and there's the herd. So I want the seed, what Zach mentioned, great opportunity for seed oils. So those could be culinary or could be for woodworking or lubrication. The fiber, I'd like to see fiber being used for textile and paper making, because it could disrupt two industries we have a big textile waste problem. We have lots of shirts that are sitting in the landfill and pants that will never biodegrade because they're made out of polystyrene or some synthetic material that does not break down. So, you know, we could start to replace clothes, you know, with that. And then
Do hemp clothes feel good?
Oh,
they're comfortable?
My favorite shirt is my hemp. My hempitecture shirt. So that's my third point, which is what the herd should be used for is hempcrete. And we just had a great presentation at the New York Hemp Lab this past weekend of actually a company that was started out of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, a company called Hempitecture. And they're out on the West Coast right now building hempcrete buildings. So right now they're focusing on hempcrete as an insulation material. Inevitably in the long term, there is possible for load-bearing components. And when you just look at that example, so a lot of our building materials are toxic, so they affect us while we're in them, as well as once we break them down and we have to take them to a landfill, a toxic waste landfill essentially. But if it's a hempcrete wall, that could break down. And so, you know, we're talking about a massive disruption of these, you know, single-use or long-term use items that will just sit in landfills for a long time.
Let me bring in on the phone Bob Duffy, who's the CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, who I think attended Hemp Lab. Is that right, Zach?
Yeah, he did. He actually gave some really awesome opening remarks at the New York Hemp Lab before our keynote.
Well, Bob, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Evan, great. Actually, great to join, and kudos to Zach and his team. I had to leave for a funeral later in the morning, but I thought it was a great event, some very thoughtful presentations, and I thought it was excellent. And it was also super that the Wegmans Pharmacy School at St. John Fisher hosted it.
Yeah, it was incredible.
So, Bob, when you look at the hemp industry, you know, we've been talking about the history, how hemp is viewed in this country, how the law is changing, how doors are opening for the cultivation of hemp and its applications. How significant of a factor in our economy do you see its potential as you understand it?
My sense is it has unlimited potential. A few years ago, there might have been about 30 acres being farmed in New York State. I think we have well over 2,000 acres right now. The governor just put $3.2 million into a processing facility in the Binghamton area. I think another $2 million given to Cornell for additional research on hemp. So that, along with, you have two differentiations in terms of industrial hemp and then, you know, the future of marijuana and marijuana legalization. I'm not a legislator, but I would sense that will be debated, discussed, and potentially happening, if not this year, in upcoming legislation, maybe the legislative session next year. But the whole world trends are changing. And I think what Zach and his team did was really get out front, because New York State has the potential to be a major player in this, and especially in the Northeast. And if you look at some of the other things going on, Constellation Brands, one of the top beverage companies in the world, has already bought into, you know, the cannabis industry into Canada. I mean, I think here's a great example of let's not debate the present. Let's look toward the future and build on it. And I think what the Hemp Lab did last week was really create a great platform, some great information on where hemp is going. And I do think it is a great opportunity economically and otherwise for New York State.
All right. And so, Bob, before I let you go, I want to ask you, if you don't mind, give me what you think maybe 5 years ago, if I would have asked you, what do you know about hemp? And I'll be honest, my answer would have been it is some form of marijuana. And if it's a product, it's like those mildly hippie related bags of rope, you know, maybe you could smoke the bag. I don't know. I mean, I was so poorly educated, which came from, my guess is, decades of kind of propaganda against hemp, for the reasons we discussed historically earlier in the hour. I was super ignorant about it. I want to ask you, were you ahead of me? Did you have a sense for what this was? And do you think government is going to move quickly enough for your taste now?
I was not ahead of you. And in all honesty, I probably learned a little bit about it toward the end of my state career with the governor.
Mm-hmm.
I would give Governor Cuomo credit for being forward-thinking with this, just looking at hemp as an industrial product. You know, I, like you, I think the differentiation in terms of, you know, the think of cannabis and marijuana versus the hemp plant. And I know it's the lower and higher THC components. I'm learning as I go along here, listening to, you know, people talk. But attitudes are changing. I think the economic opportunities coming up are tremendous. And when you look at cannabis as an industry, hemp, and look at, I mean, the entire picture, this is where the future is going. And I don't want to mention his name on the radio, but there is a very esteemed business superstar from our community that I sat next to in a meeting back in 1992, and I was a deputy chief in the police department at that time. And he said, we should legalize marijuana, we should control it, and we should tax it. And the people that criticized him probably would never even have one iota of his success in the world. And you fast forward to 2018, and you see those things happening. So I think the industrial nature of hemp, I think the many uses that it has, also the other products. And then you look at Massachusetts, which is now recreational use has come. And I think in the police industry, I'll tell you another thing too. When it comes to marijuana legalization, people have different views. And listen, I'm a former police chief. understood. I was never championing legalization during my career ever. But I saw the other side of it, too. And I think the sad thing is, when you look at the aspect of how many young men and women have had their careers and lives impacted mm-hmm. by incarceration and arrest on that industry. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And it's something that, there's many different aspects of this. So if that happens or not, that's up to the New York State Legislature and the governor, which I think will be hotly debated in this upcoming session. But on the agricultural side, we are among the strongest agricultural communities across the country here. So hemp as a product and the many things that Zach and his team brought up in these presentations last Saturday, we are in a great position right now with Cornell nearby, with the governor supporting it. I think New York State, whichever way the legalization aspect goes down the road, I would say this is separate, and this could be done now, and it can grow exponentially, and it really has many different uses. So, I'm learning. I don't even have one iota of the expertise that Zach and his team have, but I applaud them for what they're doing. And I thought the event on Saturday was outstanding.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Bob, thanks for taking the time. It's always good to catch up with you, sir.
All right, guys. Good luck. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thank you. Is Bob Duffy, the CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. And before we go to our only break of the hour, Zach, why don't you just give us a sense for those remarks? You said that he opened the event last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really just this this response from the leadership community that really see the potential of jobs. One thing, actually, if you would have asked me this question again now, what would I say is the social impact is going to be just as large as the economic impact. Like we're talking jobs, we're talking about revival, we're talking about culture that will come to this area that is, it's unforeseen in any other direction. And so I think that that's just a major component. And having the leadership community really seeing the potential and getting behind this, I think that is what's going to separate New York State, specifically this greater Rochester area, as being leaders of tomorrow than instead of watching this industry move by us.
I see a few people directing my attention to this headline from the Associated Press from May. Hemp industry loses case against U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency. A federal appeals court sided with the Drug Enforcement Administration and upheld its decision that CBD is a Schedule I controlled substance, a major setback for the American hemp industry. A couple people sending me this piece. Again, this was from back in May. And I think a couple of things. Let's just reset to make sure we understand what that decision or what that moment sort of means legally. But also, I think when you see headlines like that, it still further confuses the issue. At least it does for me when you see hemp tied that way. But Jason, when a lot of people pointing me in that direction, what should we make of that?
Well, you're right. It's confusing. When I was first getting into this industry, the differentiation between hemp-derived and cannabis-derived CBD, it's very confusing at the federal level. I would just point to the DEA memo that was recently released because of the Epidiolex being FDA approved. So they addressed the scheduling issue and dropped it down to, I can't remember if it's four or five, mm-hmm. schedule four or five, with cannabis still being one. So it's still scheduled, but at least it's not at the schedule of no medical value and highly addictive.
Okay. After our break of the hour, we'll answer Adam's question, who says, Evan, when you asked your guests about possible applications, they talked about cannabis. And again, I think, Adam, I'm not sure you heard kind of cannabinoids. But again, we'll hit that because Adam is saying, I thought you couldn't get high from hemp. If there's confusion about that, I think what we're talking about is medicinal application.
Specifically the CBD.
But let's go ahead and get our only break of the hour now. Yeah. We'll come back. We'll explain that fully what we mean because you're right, Adam. You cannot get high in the same way from hemp that you would from marijuana or what we would call cannabis, but we'll go back over that with our guests. Answer any questions you have. I see the phone ringing. If you want to talk about hemp, we'll answer your questions. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free, 844-295-8255. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with Fatima Reed, the first woman of color elected to a Monroe County judgeship ever, and the first person of color elected to the Monroe County bench since 1979. On election night, it looked like she was just short. But when they counted all the ballots, she had won a judgeship. We talked to her about why representation matters in the courtroom next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Okay, so a number of phone calls to get through. I want to get Adam's question answered right out of the gate here, and I know some of our other guests want to weigh in on where they see the application of hemp. We're also going to talk about environmental impact. So in the next 15 minutes, we're going to close the loop on all of these sort of hemp 101 questions. But Adam wrote in to say when two of our guests, Zach Sarkis, co-founder of Flower City Solutions, Jacob Fox, founder of Closed Loop Systems, talked about applications, specific products or uses for hemp going forward. One of the answers was in the cannabinoid family. Adam said, wait a second, I thought you said you can't get high from it. Mm-hmm. That's not what they're talking about, but let's explain.
Yeah, so, and I think Dr. Harold Smith can pitch in that there are many, many cannabinoids. You know, we're talking, is it 50 or above?
More, 100. It's an
excessive number of, and each one of them has their own medicinal value. Hemp is CBD-based in general, and anything that we call marijuana is anything above 0.3% THC. So all these plants have resin, and in those resins, there's terpenes, there's flavonoids, there's cannabinoids. And from there, we can extract and utilize those for specific medicinal or wellness-based
But what we're
purposes.
Getting high from is THC.
THC.
And that's not what you're going to find in hemp.
No, truly. Absolutely. Okay. Yep.
So, Adam, I hope we're answering that question for you. They're talking medicinal and other applications, but not for the purpose of recreational drug use to get high. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you for that, guys. Let me get these two quick phone calls from Roy and David who want to talk a little bit about hemp, and then we're going to have Dr. Harold Smith, Jason Klimek, give their thoughts on what the future might look like in terms of practical application. Roy in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, like our colonial ancestors did, hemp can make great paper. Like to say, they printed the Declaration of Independence on it. They didn't have to import paper from England and pay taxes.
Okay, so...
very good.
All right, so Roy, thank you. And I'm going to ask our guests how good the paper can be. We did see, before the hour began, a lot of people talking about this. There's some debate about this. The best information we have is that the drafts for the Declaration
That's
of Independence
what I've heard as well, yeah.
were written on hemp. The actual declaration is on parchment, which is actually was made from animal skin at the time. Mm-hmm. That's nothing against hemp. I think it was used in paper at the time. The actual declaration, if you're keeping score, we don't think is on actual hemp. How good's the paper that it can be made from?
Well, having it being at this point in time all imported and highly expensive, I don't have a lot of experience working with hemp paper specifically. But that kind of points to the irony of, like, here's this product that, you know, as we're cultivating more and more hemp, we will have more of these stalks that can be turned into the paper pulp. And so at this point in time, yeah, hemp paper is great. It's extremely, it's strong, you know, stronger than traditional fiber and paper. However, it's not commonplace. So it's still seen as this, like, boutique, like, niche thing versus,
gotcha.
Like, a commonplace.
And you don't need a diet. That's a key differentiator between paper.
You don't need to dye it.
Dye.
Get
like,
right on that mic for me, Jake.
Yep. Sorry. You don't need to dye it, so you don't need to input a dye to make it white.
Like bleach it or, that the level of processing is less substantial from a chemical perspective.
But the point our guests are making about the cost of hemp as paper product and importing it, just as a lay person observer here, we are importing quite a bit of hemp when I think the guests in the room are saying we could be growing and producing that ourselves here.
Absolutely.
It's part of how
I think
the
we import around 400 million per year.
I think it was actually higher than that. The past couple of years, like upward above 500, if not closer to $800 million. And that's a substantial foundation of what you see in that quote hemp economy, which is incredible.
Okay. David in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, David.
Hi, I just was enjoying the conversation and I wanted to chime in. I'm the owner of Hemp It Up, which is a store that is devoted exclusively to products made from hemp. We're about to celebrate our first anniversary, and I can attest that the paper made from hemp is of beautiful quality, and we also carry garments and bags. Hemp, I didn't catch the beginning of the show, but hemp is an immensely durable fiber, perhaps the strongest natural plant fiber, so the bags and the backpacks will last a good long time. And of course, the mainstay of our offering is CBD, which is a little bit of a misnomer because most people are benefiting most from full hemp extract. So these are products that contain all of the cannabinoids that the plant produces. We've seen many hundreds of people coming in for these. The main two reasons that people seek this great plant extract is our pain and anxiety. And we've anecdotally seen good results. And, of course, there are studies that also support those and other uses. And now that CBD is no longer Schedule 1, we're hopeful that there will be more studies done.
So, David, before
all right,
so a couple quick questions before I let you go here. Where is Hempidup?
Well, thanks for asking. We're at 622 Park Ave. We're in the little plaza near Body Mind Float Center and the 7-Eleven across from Stever's Candy.
Okay, and we've got guests here, you know, helping us see the changing picture of the hemp industry in New York State. You know, very few acres cultivated 2 years ago, over 3,000 now. Doors seem to be opening. What does that do for businesses like yours?
Well, it's true. It seems like not a couple of weeks pass without somebody coming in and saying, "Hey, I'm growing hemp," and our main mission is to offer top quality products that will leave the earth livable for the generations to come. And so, to that end, we would absolutely love to be working more and more with local producers of hemp. So that would be great if we didn't have to have hemp shipped all the way from across the continent or other parts of the globe. We would be thrilled, because every mile shipped is an increased carbon footprint. So we're looking forward to this burgeoning industry thriving in this state.
David, thanks for taking the time to call the program.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to turn to Harold Smith, who is the founder of Canimetrics and a professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Biophysics at the University of Rochester, for your thoughts on what an industry that is really thriving in this state, maybe in 5-10 years, what it's producing, what the return really is for sort of the greater public on green lighting more hemp.
So a lot of that will depend on the amount of research that's being done to understand applications. But if you look in terms of the industry, about half of the industry in terms of dollars made by companies comes from the medicinal angle. And more than half of that is in the collateral effect. People who are testing, people who are making cannabis harvesting equipment, rolling papers, whatever you want to look at. But there's a tremendous opportunity. And as soon as this becomes more widely spread and people trying and uptaking and businesses coming along, you're going to see a collateral growth of supportive industries that are around it that, frankly, it's difficult to anticipate right now what the ideation, the entrepreneur will come up with relating to cannabis. The one thing I wanted to comment about is in the past, a lot of the research that was being done was driven by, let's test Delta-9 THC, which is the major psychotropic, the compound that gets you high in marijuana. And the test was to find out what it does, how it acts in the cell, and the whole proof of looking at the quality of that chemistry, whether good or bad, but largely driven by federal dollars for figuring out why it's affecting people as a Schedule I substance. And that's left what are probably 113 cannabinoids, so the other chemistries that the plant produces, virtually untouched in terms of research. There are a few places in the world that did excellent research in this area, and we know a few things, but we actually know now how much broadly we don't know about the other chemistries. And for an example, if you put CBD in with THC, you can reduce the psychotropic effects of THC if you up the CBD in the content enough. And so when people are looking at just 0.3% THC, and not looking, as the guest from Hemp and Up reported, the full spectrum, you don't really know what's happening. And I think that's what Canimetrics is trying to understand. You can't just put on the side of a bottle 500 milligrams of CBD and have a patient really understand what that product is going to do for you.
Hmm. Okay. Jason Klimek, attorney with Boyle & Code and head of the cannabis practice. Do you have an idea of what this industry could look like in even just a few years?
In terms of the specifics, I'm not sure, but locally I spend a lot of time in the two big incubators in town, NextCore and RIT Venture Creations, where I deal with the startup companies and entrepreneurs all the time. And I've been talking to them about this industry, and honestly, it has sparked so much interest. Everybody wants in. So I think it's not
you know, necessarily what specific hemp products. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot of the ancillary things that come in, like Dr. Smith said, the testing, or one of the big things right now, photonics and the Luminate Accelerator. Well, we don't know the best growing conditions sometimes. You know, there's a debate. Is it traditional lighting? Can LEDs be replaced, which has a huge environmental impact? These are all studies that are going to come in, and maybe some of them go into the photonics accelerators. Mm-hmm. You know, it's New York has been putting behind, so much money behind technology, and I think that really a lot of these companies are going to be technology companies who are related to the cannabis and hemp industries, but they're not necessarily growing the products. They're all the support.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me get a little more feedback. CT writes to us and says, the cotton growers lobbied hard to make sure the old Southern Democrats would make it or keep hemp illegal because they wanted to protect against competition. Also, if hemp is more legalized, we French and Indian War and Revolutionary War reenactors will be able to get authentic tents rather than the cotton canvas we use now. So just one other example there. Jacob Fox, founder of Closed Loop Systems, wanted to make sure you put a finer point on the environmental impact here. And that is something that David from Hemp It Up, this new store in Rochester, was talking about. For our listeners, what is the biggest environmental impact from more of a green light for hemp?
So, you know, a huge thing is the products that come out of it that I mentioned earlier that can replace other petroleum-based chemicals. So, you know, we're talking, you know, hemp fiber replacing polystyrene. So now our clothes, you know, aren't shedding microplastics, but instead, you know, once our clothes, we don't want to use them anymore, we can throw them in our compost pile. You know, hempcrete, you know, same thing. You know, you're looking, instead of having to dispose of a building, like a wall in a hazardous waste scenario, you could dispose of it in a soil, returning to soil process. And, you know, and then, I mean, actually the growing of it and how much carbon that it's able to suck out of the atmosphere is what we call carbon sequestration. There's a great book out right now called Drawdown, the most comprehensive plan to reverse climate change. And in there, it talks about hemp. It talks about cultivating crops that are good at carbon sequestration. So, you know, that carbon can be sequestered both in the soil and in the physical plant matter, so in the stalks. And, I mean, it goes, you know, so many different ways. Hemp really has opportunities to, you know, reduce soil compaction, you know, to retain water in bioretention areas. Bioremediation, that's something we're looking into very seriously. You know, can we take contaminated land, plant hemp, the contamination actually soaks up into the plant, and then you remove and dispose of the plant properly without having to be, you know, without having to dig and scrape and truck to another landfill. So, I mean, they're really immense.
All right. So down to our last couple of minutes, and couldn't even get through all the phone calls and the interest that have come this hour. I think there's been a lot of misconceptions cleared up as we go throughout the hour, but give me next steps now. I mean, I'd love to hear from our guests as we close the hour what you think realistically the next maybe 12 to 24 months is in store for Western New York and for this state when it comes to hemp production. What's happening next, Zach?
That's great. Great question. Really, a lot is dependent on this farm bill that's kind of being in limbo on the federal level. I believe that if and when that bill passes, New York State will probably still take a research approach to permitting and people having access to cultivation. We need to collect data. We need to bring people in. We need to educate. We may need to make sure this best management practice is being implemented. So I think that the next 12 months, it'll still be in this research-based setting. I think we'll see more doors opening up around CBD cultivation, processing, extracting. I think we'll see more of these innovative community centers come popping up, specifically here in Rochester, that driving education, driving research, and also opening the doors for participation and helping people understand where the economy is going and how they can participate in it.
Okay. Harold, how do you see it?
Oh, so I would like to see greater responsibility in the testing of the products. Right now, there's no package insert. The boxes are labeled, but the boxes are a year old and the products are produced every month and stuck in the same box. So patients need to be informed about how that happens, and part of that has to be cell-based testing. I want to put a plug in for engineers, because this is material science, as well as life cycle analysis when you're starting looking at the carbon footprint of an industry. So I really foresee a lot of job opportunities coming up for all sorts of talented people who want to get in on this.
Okay. Jacob?
So, I mean, I would recommend, you know, looking at the list of Hemp Lab speakers, and there was, you know, a few of them on his point, Biomaterials Institute, you know, a lot of these groups doing some very serious work. And so I think, you know, we need to support them, you know, socially and financially, all these different groups that are looking to, you know, push the industry forward.
And my guess is Jason Klimek, attorney with Boyle & Code, who's the head of the cannabis practice, you are in the right line of work to be employed for a long time.
It's a niche that is definitely growing.
Boyle & Code's cannabis practice, and that specialty is going to come in very handy here in Western New York and New York State. Thanks for your expertise this hour. It's been great having you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Zach Sarkis, co-founder of Flower City Solutions. Online where?
FlowerCitySolutions.com.
FlowerCitySolutions.com. Jacob Fox, founder of Closed Loop Systems. Online where?
Website launching soon.
Oh, there you go. I had you teed up. Thank
You'll
you.
You'll hear.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. And our thanks to Harold Smith, who's with Cannametrics. Can we find Cannametrics online?
Also, website coming
soon. Oh, Harold. It's made of hemp. You know, it's
they're building it from hemp.
You can make anything out of hemp, it turns out. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Short break, more connections coming up.